And I happened to link up on that course. One of the people I linked up with was an amazing young woman who since became a great friend. And she's coming on the show tonight as my guest, and her name is Catherine Buchan. And it's a great pleasure to welcome her on tonight and for her to tell you a little bit about her journey and about the amazing book that she has brought out to the world. So, Catherine, it's wonderful to have you. Can you hear me okay there?
I can. That's much better now, John. Thank you. Good evening. Or good morning, wherever you are.
That's wonderful. You're loud and clear. So great to have you on. It seems so long since we were together on that fantastic course. What was it? What was the name of the place? It was near, was it near Wicklow we were on?
Oh, I can't remember. I know it was just outside Dublin. That I do remember.
Yeah. Wasn't it a wonderful course?
It was. It was an amazing transformational week.
Yeah.
I felt like I was flying by the time it was.
Yeah. And I remember, do you remember the night they played the movie, The Fairy Tale, in the evening, and then the next day we had to go off into Glendalough, that beautiful place,
yeah,
and look for fairies. And I couldn't help thinking, you know, I thought, my God, there I am wandering around the greenery of Ireland looking for fairies, you know, what would my oil executives think of me now if they It was great, and we connected then, and I think, you know, there was an instant connection, you did the Hofmann process, didn't you?
I did, yes. That was I did that a couple of years later. Yes, you'd mentioned the Hofmann process to me, I think around that time actually, but I wasn't ready to do it at that point. It took me a little bit longer to finally get to the place where I felt ready to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd like you to, if you can, just share with our listeners your journey. You know what? You know where? I always like to use the old AA program where we say how it was, what happened, and how it is now. So, if you'd like to share a little bit about, you know, your journey and your early life and what brought you to this point.
Okay, I will do my best, but do prompt me. Funny prompting, won't you?
Yeah.
Guide me in the right direction if I get sidetracked.
Have you got a cup of tea? That's the most important thing.
I got some water.
Oh, good. Good for you. Okay.
Yeah.
So, where did it all start?
Where did it all start? Let me see. So, I'll basically tell you how I got to the point of being on the Angel Therapy course. I think probably that might be a good place to start. I was working in the travel industry and in my early 20s. And for me, at that time, it was a very exciting career. The job mainly involved public relations and marketing and traveling around different parts of mainly Europe, but a little bit overseas as well, further afield to sort of South America, places like that, and promoting different hotels and generally working in the travel industry. And in the beginning, it was so exciting for me. I felt really excited about staying in all these different hotels everywhere.
I know that one.
You know what I mean? I had a bug for it, and I had to get out of my system, and it was fantastic. You know, I wined and dined, and I was dealing with press, and it was all new, all fresh, all exciting. But what happened was I did that for a few years, about 5 years, and slowly but surely it began to lose its novelty, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I wasn't able to have much of a stable home life. I didn't have any deep, meaningful friendships, really, because I was always traveling. I wasn't at home that much.
And were you living with your folks at this time? Were you still living at home?
No, I was flat sharing, actually.
Okay.
I was flat sharing in London. Yeah, so I had a base, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing that, and then I just started to get this feeling that something wasn't quite right. I didn't really know what it was, and I didn't really pay much attention. But I sort of became a little bit disillusioned with it, I think. After a while, I started thinking, how is me promoting this hotel, for example, this new hotel that has a golf course and is 5 stars, how is that actually helping people in a meaningful way?
Mm-hmm.
So And my job had really been my fulfillment, if you like, because I wasn't having much fulfillment in my relationships. One of the reasons why I was attracted to this job in travel was I just got out of my first really serious relationship with a guy. And although I was the one that ended it, I was finding that I had a big void to fill in my life, which I have reflected on in my book, which we'll talk about later. But at that time, I didn't have a conscious awareness of that. I just knew that I felt lonely and empty. So I threw myself heart and soul into my work to erase these feelings or avoid these feelings, at least.
As we do.
That was my avoidance mechanism, yeah. And the job lent itself to partying hard. There was a lot of socializing, a lot of wining and dining, a lot of burning the candle at both ends. And I went with it. I treated my body like a robot. And ignored my basic needs. And finally, several years later, I basically had a wake-up call. A wake-up call.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes, I was awoken from my deep trance.
And how was that with you?
What transpired for me was it started off, I woke up on my 30th birthday was a bit of a crisis point for me. I was in a relationship that I wasn't happy with, but I didn't want to be on my own. So I figured, you know, being with someone is better than being with no one. But I was very disillusioned. At that point I had perceived that I would be married, possibly have had a child by then, you know, living this lovely romantic dream, if you like. With a fulfilling career, and I woke up on my 30th birthday and I was very ill. I had flu, and none of those things were in my life. You know, I was with this guy that I was not sure even loved me. I was very confused whether he was the one or not, but again, I was too frightened to do anything about the relationship. I'm 30, I'm not getting any younger, and what if I leave this guy and I don't find anyone?
That's a real common one, isn't it?
You know what I mean? So I thought, rather than face that fear of not finding anyone, I'll better the devil you know, I'll stay with this guy even though I'm unhappy in the relationship. Maybe he will change. Maybe he will start doing things that and make me happy.
Yeah.
That's what I believed. I thought, you know, it was his fault I wasn't happy in a relationship, and I was waiting for the day when he would turn around and make me happy.
That is so common, isn't it? That's where I think nearly all of us get to that stage. You're realizing that one doesn't work anymore.
Yes. Well, again, it took me quite a few years down the line before I... Actually, not a few years, because I was 30 by then, but it took me a little while longer to discover that it wasn't his responsibility to make me happy. And that you can't make other people change. They are who they are, and they have their own journeys.
Mm-hmm.
And I really had a lot to learn. So that was my 30th birthday, and I pushed myself to go back to work before I was well enough, which is, again, one of my habits in the past. I used to be very fearful of the work piling up. I was quite a perfectionist, and I didn't listen to my body, and I pushed myself to go back to work before I should have done, really. And I didn't get better. I just gradually got worse until the point about 5 or 6 months later when I no longer had the energy to get into work at all. If I managed the journey, I then would just get into my office and sit there and cry. My whole body ached. I couldn't stand. I was very noise sensitive and light sensitive. And I was overwhelmed by everything. If the phone rang and I had to obviously answer it and take an action regarding my work, I just couldn't cope any longer. It was all too much. And,
did you get any symptoms of depression?
No, it was... I later found out that part of what I had was depression, but it was much more physical than that as well. I mean, I know there are physical elements of depression, but I had tingling in my leg and muscle pains. And a very fuzzy head, if that makes any sense, like an unclear head, you know, almost like sort of constantly hungover.
Right, okay. And were you actually drinking at all at the time, or?
Oh, not, I mean, not really, no. I mean, I was partying, but I wasn't drinking during the day.
No.
So it wasn't really that, I knew that, but, yeah, it was just like I couldn't sort of shake off this almost flu-like sort of thing.
But what
it did do was it pushed me so much that, thankfully, I now see it as a blessing. I didn't see it at the time as a blessing, but it gave me the impetus that I needed to end my relationship because I no longer had the physical energy to sustain the relationship or the facade of, yes, we're okay plodding along and I can cope with us, you know, with this unhappiness. And also it gave me the push that I needed to actually change the job that I wasn't making my heart sing at that time. Again, I was too afraid. I also needed the money, so that was another reason why I wanted to stay in the job. But the illness, if you like, gave me the push I needed to say enough is enough and I'm pulling out of this. And a few weeks later, I thought I just needed a rest. I just thought I needed complete rest, relaxation, a spa holiday. I'll treat myself, a couple of weeks off, be pampered, detox, and I'll be right as rain. And 2 weeks came and went. 3 weeks came and went, and by the fourth week, I thought, this is not good. I was quite despairing of not making any progress. So I went back to my doctor. I'd seen many different doctors, and none of them could decide what was wrong. But finally, a doctor was able to diagnose me with ME, or sometimes it's known as chronic fatigue syndrome.
With ME, right. Chronic fatigue, okay.
Yeah.
And had you actually left? Work? Did you resign from your work, or did you?
I had resigned at that point. Yes.
You had resigned, right? Okay.
I had. Well, I actually, you know, life is never sort of a linear progress. It's sort of, what happened was a few weeks prior to me getting really, really sick, before breaking point, if you like, I refer to it as my breaking point. Prior to that, I'd actually had a conversation with a friend of mine who was a very wise woman and been on the path, you know, been on an inner journey for many more years before I had. And she asked me some really thought-provoking questions about my career particularly. That's what we were focusing on. And what I realised when I was talking to her was that the only time I'd felt really fulfilled in the last sort of 7 years had been when I'd been studying psychology and counselling at evening class.
Uh-huh.
And she encouraged me to look into possibility of retraining in the helping profession. Because I didn't have any formal qualifications in that field at that time. And she said, well, what have you got to lose? Why not go for it?
Right.
So I had actually, aside from that, while this was all going on, I'd been investigating what my options were. And I'd found a degree that I could study for psychology and counselling. And I'd actually applied for the course prior to me having my breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and where was that? Where did you go?
Surrey.
You went to
University of Roehampton.
Oh, okay. So was that a full-time course or?
It was.
Did you do that at night? Okay. So that kept you pretty busy then.
Well, the thing was, from my breaking point, I then had I found out pretty much around the same time as my diagnosis with the ME, chronic fatigue. I found out that I got into the university. They'd given me a place. And it was due to start in seven months' time. So it was like a double-edged sword. On the one hand, I was being given an opportunity to, if you like, retrain and start to live my dream, which I believe would be, you know, a fulfilling career in the helping profession. At the same time, I was being given what I thought was a potential sentence, taking away this gift of this chronic fatigue, which the doctor had told me in the consulting room. He said, I cannot tell you, because I said, when will I get better? You know, what do I have to do? When will I get better? And he told me there is no known medical cure, nothing they could do for me, and he couldn't tell me even if I would ever get better.
Oh, that was really encouraging.
How encouraging. Yeah, so that's when I got depressed.
I can imagine that. Whoa. Golly. Whew.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I went home. Pardon?
That must have felt pretty shocking to be told that, you know, by somebody who, because the thing is, you know, I think it's pretty natural for people, especially before they wake up to what, you know, what their body's all about,
to actually put a lot of faith in the profession, don't we? I think most
Absolutely.
People have done that.
I never thought of alternative medicine prior to, well, actually, that's not true. I rarely looked at alternative medicine. It was nothing very significant. You know, I really put my faith in the hands of the doctors. And again, mm-hmm. I thought it was their responsibility to make me well.
Mm.
And I thought there must be some magic pill, surely, you know.
Mm.
No.
Yeah.
And right now, I'm obviously very, very glad that there, for me, there was no magic pill because it's where I am today, but I'll get to that. So then I had a choice.
I think of that expression, I forget whether it was Doreen or Wayne Dyer or one of those said, you know, I had to find out what isn't before I could know what is. And I think that really applies to that. I found the same when I went to church. I always say that was the purpose of church for me.
I like that.
So where did you
that
go from there?
So when I went from there, I went home and the diagnosis just hit me like a ton of bricks. I just thought, you know, my whole world fell apart, if you like. Because he just, you know, I then read articles about ME and the potential. Unfortunately, I think it was good to have the information, but I read things of cases where people were in wheelchairs as a result of the illness because it got worse.
Oh, my God.
People who, you know, lasted for years, the illness lasted for years. And so I did become depressed for several weeks, and I just sat around with this cloud over my head. I could hardly get out of bed anyway because of the illness. But I think this is when my higher self or my soul kicked in, some part of me that wanted to save me from this kicked in and thought, no, I've got a goal to achieve. I have this opportunity to turn my life around, and I have 7 months to get better. I have to do whatever I can, use all my, I put savings aside for my degree, and plenty of savings, thankfully. I thought, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get myself on day one of that degree, and then I'll take it from there. So that started me off on the alternative health, and also if I'm going to be studying psychology, it would be good to experience therapy. I'd wanted to have therapy for many years to help me with relationship issues, but I was always too afraid. I was too afraid of what other people would think, that they'd think I was crazy. I'd also find that sometimes that they would tell me to leave my partner, even though at that time I was in an unhappy relationship. I thought
that was a fear that you had, was it? That the therapist might tell you to leave your partner?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, what if she says that's the answer? You've got to leave them. So I didn't want to hear that.
No,
therapy helped me enormously sort out a lot of my emotional baggage that I was carrying around from my many years of heartache and low self-esteem that I'd never addressed. I just buried it. And it was, you know, it was time to look at it, to open the can of worms and find out that actually opening the can was the scariest thing. And, and that really they're not worms inside. More like chrysalis is waiting to turn into butterflies, you know what I mean?
Exactly. But it doesn't feel like that at the time, is it? When we first take the lid off, it feels really scary, doesn't it?
It does.
It's all
the unknown.
Yeah.
And as unhappy as I was more fearful of the unknown.
Yeah. And I always remember what one guy said to me, and he said, you know, people will only change when the pain of staying the same gets bigger than the fear of change. And I think that's so true. You know?
I agree. That was certainly true for me as well. Yeah. So after therapy, at the same time as therapy, I explored Reiki. I discovered Reiki, which I think was quite a catalyst on my spiritual journey.
Reiki,
I suppose most people listening probably know what Reiki is, but for those who don't, it's channeling universal life force energy. Yeah. And it was on my Reiki course that I discovered angels.
It was on your Reiki course?
Yes. The lady that was training me had a pack of angel cards. Not Doreen's, actually, somebody else's. But it was the first time I'd come across them.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, wow. She said, well, have a play. Think of a question and do the cards and see what happens.
Yeah.
And I did about I did the first one. I was like, oh my God, that's so true. I've got to do it again because that might have been a coincidence. But I did it again, a different question, and another spot on answer, and that just sort of set me off on the path of exploring angels.
Right. And was that the first time that you'd actually sort of consciously thought about the existence of angels, or had you done that as a child and you'd sort of forgotten about it?
No, totally new.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So it wasn't as though that was something you grew up with when you were young?
No.
Talking about angels? No, okay.
No, absolutely nothing at all. I was completely asleep prior to 2000.
So what did you do once you got that?
Well, it was like a major comfort to me, knowing that, you know, I read the little booklet that went with it, and to know that the angels were there sort of helping me, what I found was a real comfort, because although I was making progress in my healing journey, I also saw a naturopath who sorted out my nutrition. That was a big part of my healing, was cutting out things that I'd become intolerant to, like wheat, sugar, alcohol, dairy, things like that.
Did you cut out all of those things all at once?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's amazing. So what, you quit drinking alcohol completely?
Yeah.
And then you quit dairy as well and wheat?
Yeah. And wheat.
Wow, that's
sugar.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
And it was, for the first few weeks I got really bad cravings for all those things, and also it was another lifestyle shift. I'd already had a lifestyle shift in the beginning, because friends had fallen away that used to see me as a party girl. That's who I was, you know. I was a good time party girl person, and I socialised with a lot of people in that role, if you like. And once I had the ME, I could no longer be that person, and I didn't know who I was. And part of my journey was exploring, well, who am I? And my good friends stayed with me, observed my journey, but many others fell away, is quite often the case with these things. You know?
Oh, I think that's very, very common. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I had to learn and also to pass on to people, because especially when we've got sort of a open heart, you know, we want to keep connected, but... Did you find some of them just naturally fell away, and others you had to make a conscious decision to, you know,
absolutely,
move in another direction?
Yeah. I thought, for my health, my healing, I need to say goodbye to this person.
And what about your family, Catherine? Were any of those people came into the category of your family? Did you find that you needed to kind of set boundaries and lessen contact with some of the family?
We had quite a small family anyway, and I was actually moved back to my parents' house just before I got before my break. What did they call it? Before my breakdown, my crisis moment. Yeah, but I've been living with my parents anyway, because I've been saving money to do the degree and things. So it was a challenging time for them. They didn't abandon me, but they found it very hard to deal with this. You know, I'd always been a very active person, very, very active. You know, I used to find it very hard to relax. Mm. And here I was at the age of 30, sort of become the dependent child again, almost.
Mm-hmm.
But was hard for them.
And I think what happens is the whole family unit is like a mobile, isn't it? And when one element of the mobile moves, the whole lot are forced to move, and I think that's often the thing that causes a lot of difficulty within the family relationships. That's what I experienced anyway.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true for me as well. I resonate with that. What happened was, it's curious, but the first few months were the worst, when it was all sort of new and I was having, it seemed like having to at the time, but now it's more of a conscious choice of eating differently, for example, just living life differently. So initially, it was sort of a shock to them, and they didn't quite know how to handle it. And also, as part of my psychotherapy, my sessions and getting rid of emotional baggage, I had to learn how to become assertive. I'd been a yes person, both in my personal life and my professional life. So
yeah.
I learnt that I had to speak my truth, be authentic, yeah. set boundaries. That was difficult for my family in the beginning, but I held a loving intention, and eventually they got used to it.
I think it's the toughest part, isn't it? It's the toughest part for a lot
yeah.
of people
who've been used to, what people pleasing, I used to call it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, it was quite a shake up in our relationship, but one that was ultimately very healing and quite inspiring. So, going back to the angels, that the sort of the Reiki training and discovering of the angels had planted the seed, and it was round about that time that I was due to start my psychology degree, and thankfully I'd done enough healing on myself. I wasn't cured, but I had enough energy to start the degree, which I found pretty amazing, considering I'd read that, you know, the doctor had said he couldn't even tell me if I would ever get better.
And yeah.
There I was, you know.
Did you go back to see him at all, or her?
I went back a couple of times, yes, for reviews, and, yeah. He just kept saying to me, well, just take it easy, don't overdo it, but...
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? When the similar things have happened, I haven't had a lot of interest as to, you know, what changed around, and with other people I've worked with as well, people that have had cancer and cured their cancer, invariably what happened was they said, oh, it was a misdiagnosis, you know, rather than, there hasn't up till now been a lot of eagerness to find out and dig deeper, you know. But their training has a lot to do with that, I think, you know.
I agree. Well, I wasn't actually saying to him at the time I'm cured, so it was very much at that time when I stopped seeing him, so I was really better. You know? But at that time, it was very much a day-by-day process for me. I was able to make the journey into college. I could do the actual lectures. I then had the energy to do the homework, and that was it. I then had to rest. So I wasn't cured by any means. So he was still seeing me as very much still with the ME, as was I. At that time. So during that time, I basically read many, many books on self-help books.
Which were some of those?
Oh, Louise Hay's How to Heal Your Life.
Oh, you got that one. You can heal your life. That was one of my first ones.
Was it?
I didn't want to hear about it at the time. I was still unconscious when I was given that, but I think when we get given these things, even though we may not be ready for them, or we may, you know, I think they enter into the consciousness, and it just takes time, and then eventually they sprout, because I was given that, and it's a wonderful book, isn't it?
It is. It's so funny you say that, because I was actually given it 5 years prior to that, and I was like, I'm not ready.
That's exactly me. I was given mine by the wife of one of my captains after a drunken... We'd been out, the two of us, the captain and I, and got smashed, and the next morning we were sitting hungover in the house, you know, and she was looking at us, shaking her head, you know, and she gave me this book and said, John, you know, you better read this book. And I thought, oh, my God, she's lost the plot.
But
it was 3 years, 4 years later when I eventually, got to my bottom. So it's interesting. That book's had such an impact on so many millions of people, I think.
It has, hasn't it? Yeah, I think she's an amazing woman, such an inspiration. So that was one of the key books that helped me. Also, Caroline Mace is another one that I love. Pardon?
You got her early then, because some of that stuff is quite advanced stuff. So, you know, that's great.
I was on a mission. That's all I can say. Yeah. I was on a mission to cure myself. So anything that I discovered, I was reading. So I liked her book as well.
Why some people don't heal or something like that.
That's it. Yeah, why they can heal, but why some people don't. I thought that was actually key for me as well, because I'd been thinking at that time. I thought, maybe I should join an ME support group. Maybe that will help me.
Which one?
A support group for people with ME.
Oh, I see. So everybody's sitting around talking about the problem rather than
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I felt very lonely, you see, because no one else that I knew at that time had the illness, and I didn't really want to talk about it too much to people at college. I didn't want them to have pity on me or to treat me any differently. I just wanted to fit in and belong. I still had that issue going on. So I really thought I could do with people who understand what I'm going through. That, why don't I do that? And then I read her book, thankfully, before I joined one. I thought, oh, my God, no, I don't want to get stuck with people who have their own issues and their own beliefs about it. I want to mix with people who believe they can cure themselves and that healing is possible, and they're doing everything they can to do it, you know.
That's so good.
And then the universe and the angels sent me my friend Alex, and which I talk about in my book, who is a guy.
Was this a guy or a girl?
Yes, my friend Alex Howard, he was studying at university in Wales, actually. So I was in England, he was in Wales, and he submitted an article in a psychology magazine about studying a student's experience with ME. It had his email address at the bottom, and I thought, oh my God, is someone, I just read the article, and I thought, this person understands exactly what I'm going through. I must get in touch with them. And we started off a friendship for several months, and it was such a heaven-sent gift. It was amazing. And he was also very passionate about healing himself. And doing all that he could, and was, you know, reading lots of, we shared lots of books and lots of experiences and tips and things like that. And then we met up and we became boyfriend and girlfriend for a year and a half.
It's great. So you found somebody, it makes such a difference, isn't it, when you can get somebody that you know, acknowledges the need to heal and you can kind of do your stuff together. It makes it much more easy relationship. And how did that develop in the end?
What happened was he was quite a bit younger than me, 11 years to be exact. And we were great friends and we shared a lot of wonderful experiences together. It was the best relationship I'd had up to that point ever. It was the most honest relationship I'd had. We communicated. It was very much, I see a distinct difference in my relationships post-2000 and my wake-up call compared to prior to 2000, you know. Prior to 2000, I'd been too afraid to speak my truth, to communicate, and all those things I described previously. Whereas post-2000, having therapy, being aware of my spirit and my true self and how important it is to be true to myself, I made sure I communicated, and he did likewise. And I ended the relationship, but I did it in a way that was loving and kind, and we remain friends to this day. So it's really just a question of.
Isn't that amazing? That's the way it's supposed to be, you know. It's the tragic thing about, and you know that, you know, both Mary, my wife, and I are passionate about teaching about relationships. And it's so tragic that people feel that, you know, when they Mary's come up with a great term, decoupling rather than divorcing. Decoupling,
I think that's
a lovely term. So do I.
That is great.
And, that we were talking about it, and the thing is, especially when there's children involved, like, the most important thing to a child, whatever's happened, is that their mum and dad love each other, whether they're married or not, or living in different houses, you know, that's the greatest, as we know from the Hoffman process, in that last day when that visualization's done as the parents coming together, the whole room is in tears, isn't it? Even the visiting graduates are in tears, you know. And it's so important. So that's amazing. That's wonderful. And you're still friends today, yeah?
We are. And it's quite interesting that you say that, because a lot of our friends couldn't understand it.
Particularly
his friends. You know, they're saying, well, why aren't you upset? How can you be so calm about this? Both of you, how can you be so calm? We know how much you are in love with each other. How can you be so calm about an ending? And we were just like, well, that's the kind of relationship we have with ourselves and with each other. You know, people change. We grow. Sometimes we grow together. Sometimes we grow apart. And that's that's how it is. The only thing you can commit to is being your true self and being loving in each moment. And
Would it be too personal to share? Would you feel it's too personal to share? What brought you to the belief that, you know, did you both think that at the same time, that it was just time to move on? Was there any, you know, was there something?
Yeah, no, I can share that. It's actually in the book, so I can definitely share that. But,
oh, okay. That's great.
Yeah. What happened was I was working on an issue of not feeling good enough, and I asked Alex at that time was knew a lot more about NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, than I did, and he also knew about The Journey by Brandon Bays.
Oh yes, that's great work, well, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd read the book and I wanted to do the process because I believed it would help, but I didn't really have confidence in doing it myself. So Alex kindly volunteered to lead me, to guide me through it, basically.
On the course, you mean?
No, just one-on-one session.
Oh, from the book. From the book. Because
yep.
It's got, the, it's got it all
the
in the book, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, got you.
Yeah, and also he was also training to be an NLP practitioner at the same time as well as doing his degree. So he did have a good idea of, you know, how to run the session, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that with me, and it was, I had an amazing experience, one that's quite hard to articulate, but I can say that I had a big emotional release. It was very profound.
Wow.
And as a result of that, over the next few days, sort of the internal, you know, when you have these emotional releases a few days later, sort of things seep through, and then sort of this internal shift goes on inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that going on, and then it was like a shift in my perception of how I saw Alex. It was literally like I woke up again one day and saw him differently. He was no longer my lover, my boyfriend. He was more like a brother to me.
Right.
I knew that I wanted, because he was 11 years younger, he was in a very different place. He was, if you like, embarking on his life. Just about to finish his university degree and start his career, and his marriage and children were nowhere near his immediate future. You know, it was a long-term goal for him. Whereas to me, I was thinking, actually, I feel much more ready to settle down than I ever have.
Yeah.
And that was the big shift in me, if you like. I suddenly felt ready to commit, whereas I hadn't. And I knew
Can
he
I
wasn't
ask you?
That. Sure.
Can I ask you also, Catherine, just interesting, because I'm deeply listening to the situation. Obviously, you know, both of us being committed Hoffman graduates, you know, where we always go to. So was there, that large age difference, not that large, but 11 years is quite, did that reflect anything in your parents' relationship?
No, actually.
What about any siblings?
I'm just trying to think, not in the physical sense. Anyway, physically, they're only my mum's 2 years older than my dad. I'm just racking my brains now, thinking back to the Hoffman.
She is older, though. She is older.
She is older.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Because that's interesting. Because I would suggest that probably if a research was done, it's more often that the guy is older, you know.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting interesting connection, even though it may not have been the same number of years. It was that your mum was older than your dad.
Yeah. It's probably something about the dynamic there, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, I've never found it fail. I've never found the Hoffman concept fail, not once if you really dig deep, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's where I was with Alex. At that time, I'm trying to think where I was. Yeah, so I can't, basically we were still, that was another major sort of positive aspect of my healing, but I still wasn't cured. And it basically took me about 2.5 years to actually cure myself, to get to the point where I thought, now I'm cured.
Yeah, right, okay. Of the ME. Yeah.
And that was just before I started the last year of my degree. And then during the last year of my degree was when I started to focus on Doreen's work, actually.
On Doreen Virtue, yeah?
Yes, I was finding that I needed more of a spiritual element to my to my life. I was I'd done a lot of mental activity with the psychology and the NLP and hypnotherapy, but my soul was crying out for some contact with spirit.
That's so interesting, you know, Catherine, because that's one of the things that I observe, not in a critical way, just an observation. Like when I, because I did a lot of spiritual stuff as well, and when I would go on NLP courses or hypnotherapy courses, the common denominator that I found in nearly all of them was the people didn't want to go and do the emotional stuff. You know, it was very much more around, it can all be fixed with the thoughts and everything else.
Yeah.
And I found that quite prevalent in that field.
Yeah.
But it's great that you heard your voice and you went and decided to do something about it.
Yeah.
Was that what led you up to doing the course?
Yes.
To doing the ATP?
Yeah. I went to the World Angel Day in 2002.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where I heard Doreen speak for the first time. And it was my 33rd birthday, which I think is quite significant.
Yeah, absolutely. Two threes.
Yes. And she just blew me away. And I thought, this woman is amazing. Because I loved her, the fact that she had a scientific background, that she's a former psychotherapist, and the fact that she lives her life metaphysically.
Yeah.
You know, working with the universe, manifesting.
Yeah.
Calling on the angel.
No, she is. It's amazing, really. So that was 2003, was it?
No, that was 2002.
2002.
And then I did the course in 2003, yeah.
Yeah, but that's amazing, because we were on the same course, and I didn't get to that World Angel Day, but I went to see her talk at the Friends Meeting House, which I think she did at the weekend. Or the following week. And I had exactly the same experience. I went with some friends of mine, and I sat there, and I was completely transfixed. I was just completely, so engrossed in what she had to say and her manner and her being. And I knew that I had to do that course. And I went home that night, even though that was it was quite a long way hence the actual course, and I signed up that night on the internet. I was so sure. Yeah, she's got an amazing, amazing presence about her, hasn't she?
She has. She's an amazing speaker, and it's like her amazing positive energy and her love just oozes through her.
Yeah.
Like a persona when she speaks. It's quite magnetic.
Yeah. So that's what led you to Ireland.
That's what inspired me, yes. And I just, at that time, I was, you know, finances were being a bit of a challenge. Because I'm still a student and I'd spent quite a bit of money on courses, retraining myself in many different things. And I just signed it over to the angels and I just said, angels, I want to go on this. If I'm meant to go, please provide me with the funds.
Yeah.
And it all happened beautifully.
And where did they come from?
Actually, my husband, he believed in it enough and in me to help me out. So
we're now already, we've jumped now, so you've met Mark and got married.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I can backtrack.
So you met Mark by this time.
Yes. Well, part of my healing was I wanted to cure myself of being unhappily single prior to meeting Mark. And I managed that. Well, when I went onto the World Angel Day, I was in that place. I was in a very peaceful, happy place.
Yeah.
And then about 2 weeks later, I met my husband, my now husband.
Yeah.
We met on an NLP course. Funny enough.
And then after you got married, you went pretty quickly then onto the ATP in Ireland.
Yes. Yep.
Did that have a profound effect on you as well, that ATP that we were on?
It did. Well, I'd never ever thought of myself or anyone else. Well, I knew that some people were born psychic and had this gift, but I'd never thought that I could be psychic or that everyone has this potential. If they wanted to tap into it, they could.
Yeah.
So, it was transformational in that suddenly I rather than just ask the angels to help me, I could actually help other people by communicating with the angels. That was transformational.
And what was the, do you remember the day when we spent where Doreen was deciding, or getting us to decide which realm we were in? You remember we spent the whole day doing that? What realm did you end up in? Was it the incarnated? Was it the elementals?
No, it wasn't. Definitely wasn't elementals.
I wouldn't have thought incarnated.
Yeah. I know I was with one of the facilitators. I can't remember
Judith?
Her name.
Judith?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, Judith. Yeah, incarnated, yes.
So, yeah, the incarnated, Judith. Okay.
Same group as I was in.
Okay.
we all ended up, because I was in the wrong group, you know. I thought I was in the wise ones. So I was in the wise ones, and suddenly Angie,
right.
You remember Angie from Hawaii?
Yes.
She came down
and
she got hold of me by the shoulder and she said, "Get out of there and get down there." She said, "I could see you on the first day." And I said, "Oh, okay." I didn't know anything about this stuff then, but.
Oh,
it was such
funny.
A lovely day. It was a wonderful week, that really was.
It was. It seems such a long time ago now.
And
you have a good memory.
Yeah, well, it's just that they've all been pivotal points in my life, I think. That's what I think.
Right.
So do you know what? It's just the cup of tea you're talking, it's the time has just whizzed by, and I want to make sure we get some time to talk about your book. So
okay.
I know we're going to jump on, and I know you found Hoffman, and I know that you love that, like nearly everyone does, and had a big transformation. And it's interesting, after your Hoffman, you got down and you wrote your book. So tell us about your book. Tell our listeners about the title, of what it's about, and where they can get it, and all that stuff.
Okay. Yes, you'll have to keep me on this time, because I didn't bring a clock with me. So
that's okay. Only because if I don't get off on time, I get shouted at by the beautiful Don, who's our program director.
You just keep me right, okay? Well, the book's called 22 Boyfriends to Happiness.
Is that really the right figure? Is that the right figure?
I'll tell you the story behind the title. My great brother, who's a very creative genius as well, we were talking one day, he was having relationship issues, and I was wanting to shed the light for him and to help him know that there is light at the end of the dark tunnel he's in, or was in at that time. So I was saying to him, "Oh, do you remember the guy that I went out with, that this, that, and that happened?" Because it reminds me of that, and I was going to go down that road and, you know, tell him about that. And he said, "Oh, was that the one that was blah, blah, blah?" And I said, no, that was the other one. And he said, "Oh, was it that one?" I said, "No." He said, "Do you know what you should call your book, 22 Boyfriends to Happiness?"
Oh, okay.
And that's how it started.
Accurate reflection, though.
Yes. So when I sat down, I thought, well, actually, I love that title. It makes my heart sing when I hear it. I just think it's such a joy that I can look back on my experiences and pull out 22 experiences. They're not all boyfriends. Some were one-night stands. Some were just kisses in the nightclub, but they still, I learnt lessons from each one of those experiences.
Right. Oh, that's so cute. That's so honest as well. That's fantastic, you know.
I was going to say, I got a mixed reaction about the title. Everyone loves it, but quite a few women, I will have to say, go, "Oh my goodness, 22, that's a lot."
Wow.
And I find myself saying, "They weren't all boyfriends."
And how long did it take you to write the book in reality, Catherine?
2 years.
2 years. Okay.
When you
wrote it, did you sort of write it with somebody? Did they help you? Did you get an editor afterwards, during, or how did that work?
I wrote it totally by myself in the beginning, and then I got a freelance copy editor to edit it for me. A fantastic freelance copy editor she's brilliant.
Yeah, where was that, in England?
It was in England, yes. Yeah, I highly recommend it.
And how long did that process take?
She took about 3 weeks.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, 3 weeks to do it the first time.
Wow.
And then then I sent it back to her and she made a few more suggestions and then it came back again. So I guess about a month, 6 weeks in all, really. I just would like to make the point about the book, though. A lot of people think that I'm saying 22 boyfriends to happiness means you need 22 boyfriends to get to be happy. And I just like to reassure listeners that that is not at all the message in my book. The point of it is that happiness is found within, and it's our responsibility to make ourselves happy, and we can all do it, and it's great fun trying, well, not trying, but it's great fun making ourselves happy. Yeah. And I also provide the tools on how to do that. It's, the subtitle is My Story and the Seven Secrets on How to Find True Love.
Oh, that's fantastic. What did you do for printing and all that kind of stuff? Because it's a first-time book, and I really admire the fact you got out there on your own. Did you get a print-on-demand printer? Or?
Thank you. No, we didn't. We gave I don't know what they call it. It's not a print-on-demand, but because it's very much a team effort in the production side of the book. Myself and my husband worked together very much. He had quite a large part in the actual book production. I did the writing. Got the copy editing, and he actually organised the printing. But this is a printer in the UK who I've referenced in the book, and people are I'm very happy if you want to email me wanting to know specifics about that. Because I have got quite a few people who've asked me about information about how to produce a book, and I'm very willing to give that information out. So.
When you got it printed, what sort of run did you get to start with?
1,000. Copies to
you
start
got
with. Yeah.
And you got it on Amazon, didn't you?
Yes, it's on Amazon UK and some of the Amazons, but predominantly Amazon UK, yes.
Okay. And who fulfills that? Who fulfills the shipment? Do you do that yourself?
We do, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Also available in the UK in Waterstones.
Oh, it's carried in Waterstones. That's fantastic. How did you get... Yeah. Did you just approach them yourself?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's amazing. I think that's fantastic. I really think that's an incredible achievement, for the first time. I think that's amazing. And all credit to Mark as well, because I did meet Mark in the end. Did I meet Mark or did I just
meet
him?
You did, very briefly, yes. I think in Brighton on one of the talks you were giving, yes.
That's right, on one of the talks I gave, I met him. Yeah, lovely. I really connected with him, and, we had a lot in common with his... His former relationship, and he's gone on. And what's Mark doing? He went on to do the Hoffman as well, didn't he?
He actually did the Hoffman before me. He was ready to do it before me, and I thought that was great because then he can tell me tell me what it's like, so I know whether or not I really want to do it.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I got the email. To say that you'd done it, I was with Mary at the time, over in Canada, and I was telling her about it, and when I heard that you'd been on it, I was just so excited and thrilled, because it is an amazing piece of work, and I think it's helped so many people.
It's about being ready for it at the right time, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, like everything is, So, now, would you like to tell our listeners your email address if they want to email you, and if you've got a website and that sort of thing, if you could let that up?
I will.
We're just running up to time now.
Yep. I will give my website address, and the email's on there. It's www.catherinebuchan.com, and I'll spell that. Catherine, B for Barcelona, UCHAN for Norman.
.com. Oh, that's
wonderful.
www.catherinebuchan.com. And I can't wait to read the book. I know you've got a copy winging its way to me.
It is.
So, fantastic.
Brilliant.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's hard to believe that the hour is up already. It really
is. Well, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for the great opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome.
And wish you lots of love and happiness.
Thank you very much, and I look forward to you meeting my beautiful wife, Mary, and, we've got this situation, we've got a classic, interesting situation, we're in different countries at the moment, but we talk every day, and one of the things I've missed out on is for her to meet all my friends over here, so when she comes over, we'll all get together, and we'll have a great reunion.
That would be great, I look forward to that.
All right. Okay, Catherine, thanks so
lots
much for coming on. And lots
Thank
of love
you.
To you and Mark, and speak to you soon.
Thank you
very
Catherine. Much, John.
Take
Bye.
Care. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.